Well, it's on.
Okay, so let's call to order the regular meeting of public hearing of the North Bend Planning Commission for Thursday, July 28, 2016. First item of business is to approve tonight's agenda. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the agenda as it was presented.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any changes or adjustments to tonight's agenda? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor of approving the agenda say aye.
Aye.
Okay, next item is to approve the minutes for July 14th, 2016 Planning Commission meeting. Can I have a motion?
So moved.
Okay, motion and a second.
A second.
We have a motion and a second. Any comments or changes to the minutes for July 14th?
Yes, sir.
No. Hearing none, all those in favor approving the minutes for July 14th say aye.
Aye.
Minutes are approved. Next item on the agenda is public comment on non-agenda items. Seeing no one from the public present, we will move on to item number four, the public hearing amendments to residential design standards for single family and cottages in North Bend Municipal Code 18.34.050. Before opening the public hearing, I will ask our staff, represented by Ms. Estep, to give us any updates or changes since we last met on this item.
Let's see here. There are some slight edits. Actually, the only one you would find is on 16, where, recall, we were talking about how to vary the front yard setbacks. And so there's some additional language there that basically states that 25% of the total number of homes shall vary by an additional 5 feet beyond the minimum. So if the minimum is 20, it would have to vary to 25. And then another 25% of the homes shall vary by an additional 8 feet. So you would have, so you'd have 50% of the homes varying like that. And then we said front yard, and then, of course, you can't have no more than two homes in a row shall be sited at the same front yard setback is what where we're at.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is that, so the streets are probably going to have some arc to them, right?
Yeah.
By their other design standards.
That, yeah.
So now we're jockeying, if you will, frontages along an arc.
Well, this does say, the first sentence says, to break up visual monotony on a straight street, no more than two houses. So there is room for interpretation there, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. So this is intended to really apply to a straight street.
How many house widths does it say straight?
Well, yeah, I mean, there is professional judgment in everything we do, so... typically, if the street is meandering, we would call that a meandering street. You know, this is like this main avenue is clearly a straight street.
So
you
this,
can
this
get
doesn't
into
apply
the,
then? Would this apply in
well,
the meandering?
It would not. It is intended right now the way it's written to apply definitely on a straight section of a street.
Yep.
So I do know the council has an interest to really vary setbacks, front yard setbacks. So I think this is something we should talk about and potentially dial in on that language, maybe even a little bit more. So we can apply it probably the same whether we're on a straight street or a something that curves like
that. The backyard piece fits, right? Because you can play that game 5 feet off the back. But then when you start talking about front setback in an arc, it starts to look wonky, right? Because you're forcing slightly changed faces, you're almost facing toward each other in some areas, right?
Yeah.
Particularly if they're small lots.
You know, I would actually get rid of the first sentence. And just start with no more than two homes. And I would actually start with, you guys mind if I just, I'm on page 16, at the very bottom page. So we're going to get, I would propose getting rid of the, to break up the monotony on a front straight street, and just say no more than two homes shall be sited at the front, same front yard setback. And then I would say 25% of the homes shall vary by 3 feet, and then we go 3, 5, and 8, and add another 25%.
That allows a developer to really pick home sites and put
yeah.
to fit.
And I mean, the setback right now is 20 feet to the house. So by adding and then another 5 feet on 50% of the homes to the garage. So right now, the garage at a minimum is set back 25 feet. That's a 25-foot driveway. If you add another 8 feet, my perspective is it's really a long driveway for a 7,500 to 8,000 square foot lot. But, so you know, because the visually, you've got, this actually, you know, after talking to the architect, this what we're doing really creates a lot of diversity. So yeah, the 8 foot is where I'm...
That might actually promote a detached garage.
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
Which I can understand.
Right. It would almost be, yeah, better to require that. So, because you're at 33 feet foot, you know, and that's just a lot of impervious surface. A lot of people don't want a big paved area in Carlin.
What's the typical width of these lots?
Well, they're between 50, 60. Mm-hmm.
So could feel like you have, from coming down that same street, you can see driveway, in a sense. A lot of space in front yard of each house.
I mean, the reason why, I'll give you plenty of reason why you set homes closer to the street is, in older neighborhoods, you have big porches, and actually they're not set back that far from the street. Cars were, well, they were big too back then, but and then by allowing, like we have in the code right now, a porch can protrude into the front yard setback 5 feet. I know there's some concern on the city council with that provision. I like, professionally, my professional judgment is you want to incentivize a porch. So if you say that everything needs to be set back at 20 feet, you then have to require a porch. Otherwise, what will happen, because they sell square footage, they'll build homes that don't have porches. So by giving the porch the latitude to extend in, you get that. So depending where we end up, that's one thing to think about in the realm of this right here.
So, Jenna, I just have a question. When you're going to suggest that we consider 25% by 3 feet, currently, the 5 feet and 8 feet that we have make up 50%, while the other 50% is at the base setback.
Yeah.
So if we add in another level, doesn't that mean 25% will be even further setback?
No, what I would say is 25% should be at 3 feet, 25 at 8 feet, or 5 feet. If you kept the 25 at 8 feet, then you would have 25 at the minimum. See, here's the toughest thing about prescribing. When you get too prescriptive, you actually create, every neighborhood then is going to have the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, you know, I'm a fan of the living space of the home being close to the street. So, if somebody's sitting on the front porch, you know, there's, on lots like this, rural, large lots, not so much. So the 8 foot is the one that I struggle with, that I'm struggling with. I mean, maybe it's 3 and 5. Maybe we go 3 and 5. Because visually, all you're doing, that's enough to visually... Then when you add the fact that we're not allowing every home to have white trim. Because when you line them up next to each other, 10 feet apart, and then everybody has white trim, the eye just looks down the white trim and it's all one. We're not allowing the white trim anymore to be the only color, so you'll be looking down. Meanwhile, you know, is 2 feet difference enough to visually recognize? That's the big magic question. But if you did 3, 5, and 8, you definitely are starting to really get a lot of modulation.
Or an appeal and a given plat that could work.
Yeah. Now,
so before we go any further into this, I thank you for your question. We have to do our public hearing before the Planning Commission gets their turn.
That's the point.
So is there anything more that you want to update us as to?
No, I think that's pretty much where we are. The only thing I guess I would also update you on is this is still kind of at what we wanted to do tonight is find out how many public, how many were interested and get their input and then go and again refine it one more time. So tonight we're not trying to get to a conclusion. We're trying to get all the issues out so we can go back and refine it. So just that pressure is not there to try to get an answer.
Got it. Okay. Does anybody have any questions for Jenna? Or
I'll just go in the hearing phase.
We need to do it. But I just wanted to know if you had a question before.
I have comments later.
Okay.
Maybe so.
All right. So we'll go ahead and open the public hearing for amendments to residential design standards for single family and cottages in North Bend Municipal Code 18.34.050. Seeing no one from the public present, we will go ahead and close our public hearing and move on to the Planning Commission deliberation and comments. Who would like to begin?
I'll circle back to the driveway conversation.
Okay.
I'm preaching to the choir, I know.
So we're at page 16, section G.
Yeah. So driveways are expensive ways to manage the land, is one thought. You're just wasting space. And typically, if you look at rugged neighborhoods, what happens over time, if not on the first purchase equation, certainly within 10 years, multiple cars begin to show up in the same parking space that you afforded in a particular house. So if you have a long driveway leading up to a two-car garage, highly likely as the family grows and multiple drivers start showing up, you've got four cars parked in and around that same house on a 50-foot lot. So at the end of the day, everybody do what they want to do. Well, why should we force them to create parking space in their front yard?
I think that, to me, was part of why we had a 25-foot setback, thinking 10-foot and 10-foot for two cars, right? So they could have an additional two cars in their driveway if they needed to. And then if they're having more, that's where the street comes in. So do we need an additional 8 feet, or do we want to talk about visually? And what I think about when I'm talking about setbacks is the privacy on your balcony and your patios. And so when you're out front, you might want to look across your neighbor, or you might want to have a quiet evening out to yourself. And so those setbacks will take that porch area and give you the privacy, by promoting or setting back that structure.
Yeah.
Distance, I think, can be discussed what's appropriate in those things. But I think that offers a selling point and an aesthetic, too. Your quiet nature community.
So has there been any questions come back to us from City Council on this? What's the origin of this change, I guess?
Of this change? The City Council, back in March had a work, kind of a mini retreat where they talked about wanting to kind of create code amendments that allowed retention of the small town character and reduce the look and feel and see a sameness. And so we're kind of working on some of those. This is their biggest impact for the structure. So for those, I don't remember who wasn't here last, but this portion of our code only deals with the structure and the placement of the structure based on that setback provision. So we thought that it's lovely. It's a small section, so it's manageable to get in and start the conversation. And the sooner we can get it out the door and implemented, every new development would have to abide by it. The other sections of our code, in my opinion, are like streets and stuff, are pretty good. We're looking at maybe you'll hear it tonight, a different street section for the larger lots. So that's kind of why this one's coming. More will come as council as we deal with the next, which would be more the bulk and dimensional, like lot sizes and stuff.
So they're seeing what we're talking about. They're saying, hey, this is...
Yeah, you guys are talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
So this, what this did, you know, is we worked with an architect, our consulting architect, to really dial in on changes and edits that we feel would get rid of that architectural monotony, that production building.
And are reasonable or something in the market that's happening or in current design standards, I guess.
Is this reasonable?
Yeah, I'm saying, is that mm-hmm. part of the reason why going to an architect, they're going to know those kind of up-to-date trends?
Whenever we deal with architecture, you can make a change that makes a building not feasible very easily, and unless you're, you know, as a planner, I always consult with an architect like on all our design review type stuff, just to make sure what we're implementing doesn't actually have a negative architectural result, because that does happen actually a lot. You think you're changing something to have, like, a smaller scale, so a lower roof line, but then all of a sudden you're restricting something to have an 8-12 pitch, and you might not have thought of that, because you're not, you know. So that's why we have it. I had him get involved.
So we're still talking about Section G and setbacks. What are you thinking, sir, Mr. Lecky?
Well, I just want to overlook our...
So we do have, and I apologize, I should have made note that we do have one written comment.
We do, right. John Day did submit.
So if you haven't read that, go ahead and take a minute and read that over.
I have a comment on page 14, C2, roof materials.
Yeah.
I think it's time to stop allowing cedar roofs to be constructed. There's no reason for it. It's there's a lot of less expensive materials in the market that are far more fire safe. In fact, I would really promote the term FireWise in this entire document, in terms of when we talk about vegetative cover around properties and employ the FireWise techniques about certain spaces between brush and the house and this kind of thing, trees, because there's no reason to continue to promote flammable materials in homes that we don't need to. You mentioned in your comment 5 different materials, cedar shake being one. There's a lot of synthetic materials that are just going to shake them up better. Isn't that look?
So just to clarify, are you talking about roofing or siding?
Roof materials. Paragraph 2.
So you would like?
In other words, we qualified the materials of roofing. You recommend certain materials may include cedar shake. I think it's time to make that either a conditional use where we have additional protection of the home, we're not allowing
So it sounds like you want a straight cedar shake. Anybody opposed?
I guess I'm thinking through the interpretation. If I don't mention cedar shake, and I read the rest of it, you have to actually preclude it. You know what I'm saying? We're taking it off our list, but we're not saying you can't use it, right?
Yeah, I think we should say cedar shake as an unsafe material should not be used in our community.
So would it work if you changed the period at the end of the sentence after acceptable? So instead of a period, it's a comma. Cedar shake roofs are not acceptable or not permitted.
To other cities, not allow that.
So slippery slope. If it's allowed by the fire code, we're probably going to have a hard time sticking with it.
Well, it's all over the board. The only houses being built now with cedar shakes are custom. So I don't really, I think unless, they're just too expensive, so they just don't get built anymore. Mm-hmm. Unless you're custom. I was going to say up on the hill,
It's a rare
talking,
product.
Yeah, so you could probably, by prohibiting, you're probably not affecting the average production type builder that's going to build down here. You would maybe affect somebody who wanted to build their own house and they wanted that look, but it's pretty small.
It's a statement about how you do the material. I'm a forester too. I love cedar shakes.
Mm-hmm.
But I
know
how much they promote.
This is a planning commission opinion of whether you want to.
Setbacks are sufficient. I'm more giving confidence that you're not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I can see a subdivision. I think that's what we're talking about, but not individual homes, like a custom home. I don't know if I'd want to say it's not allowed in the entire city, but on a mass scale, it's going to be 75, 100, 20, however many homes.
So,
hold on, Mr. Lecky.
I was just history. I think of the neighborhood. Help me. 3/4 acre lots.
La Forest.
Say again.
La Forest.
Yeah. And they, I guess, in the last 7 to 10 years, started all replacing the roofs to a metal product. I think it's supposed to look like shake. Mm-hmm. But they were originally shaped roofs, I think, right?
Yeah. I mean, you could do say something for subdivisions of more than 17, which is a number you have in the code. Cedar shakes roofs are not allowed. Or you could just say cedar shake roofs are only allowed on custom one-off builds. Something like
that. It's up to the maker of the initial motion if he wants to consider changing that. I'm going to speak just in favor of this, and what I see our role is, and when we have cedar shakes, it's not about allowing that person to do it, it's about the potential, just like it is when you have buildings that can come off their foundations in floods. That presents the risk to other homes. So cedar shakes will allow those embers to pop and burst and jump to other homes and fly in the air. And so when you have 4 homes on an acre, that's close enough where you can present that danger to another home.
You're in a fire environment.
Hold on, Elizabeth.
I can speak actually in favor as well. Again, to the point, if we value having trees out here that we do, even if you have homes that are larger than blocks,
mm-hmm.
and there's extensive tree cover, you're risking neighbors.
Yes.
I think it's just a good idea, and it's time to do that. There are materials that can mimic it far safer in terms of protecting the neighbors.
Why don't we just why don't we just go with, I really don't think it's, you just don't see them getting built. I'm trying to remember the last new home built with one.
How would supply the 200 square foot storage shed that now has to get a permit?
Well, it doesn't have to get a, what we're doing, it has to get a floodplain permit. But what we're doing is a placement permit, and we're not charging for it. So we're making it as easy as FEMA will let us do. So, but yeah, I know that's a frustrating one. Well, you haven't said that.
That's what I'm getting to.
Yeah.
This is just for single family and cottage, right?
Yeah, I mean, typically if it said no roofing materials and it says no cedar shake, we wouldn't let cedar shake on the little structure in the back either. We'd just say, you know, be consistent. That would be how it would be implemented, yeah.
Mr. Ryan, the maker of the motion, do you want to make any changes or do you want to call a question?
Call the question.
Okay, so all those in favor of removing cedar shake roofs from a acceptable method, making it a not acceptable method. So you would strike cedar shake roofs from the current location, you would change the period to a comma after acceptable and say cedar shake roofs are not permitted. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
The ayes have it. Motion approved 4-2-2.
And the motion, just for the record, the motion came from
Commissioner Ryan.
Commissioner Ryan, seconded by
Commissioner Gilderson.
Okay.
Did you have anything else?
This not come under building codes, but I do think it'd be wise for the city to start considering employing fire-wise general policy fire-wise in terms of just what was required.
I would
build a hole in a way that's protected from flash fire.
I'd be happy to have that discussion. I look at, you know, how a lot of the developments are going in today, and I don't see it as a problem where it is on the existing homes that have been built. So I think that's something we should discuss and figure out.
Yeah, and we may are, and we fantastic, but we follow it. I just, for reading these codes, I don't come up that term very frequently. So I just wonder if it's a conscious thing or a subconscious thing.
Well,
I'd say my neighbors took the exception with the amount of trees that we would have had to remove, which changes the character of the neighborhood. And so that's why I think there's a broader discussion that the community should take part in.
Yeah, that's a good point. It does impact. Ironically, we don't. Well, I shouldn't say that, because between Surf Falls. Yeah, it would be something we could take up when we take up trees.
Fire-wise doesn't require to take trees out. They require you to remove from the bottom, get them off the ground, like 12 feet of leaves, and try to get rid of the flash fire materials close to the ground.
We require that for the most part when new developments go in. You'll notice a lot of the trees get limbed up. Cleaned up because now they're kind of in an urban, more urban setting. Yeah.
It doesn't also limit home choice right against the house or the lake.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of time. There's things that probably doesn't put owners need to do it. It may start with property safety and damage.
Mm-hmm.
I think
King County is promoting that. You know, King County.
Thank you. So we'll put that on.
Okay.
Can I get everybody to go back to page 10 of our packet, which is the memo? And my question is, in after the RE, there's one in the second paragraph that starts North Bend Municipal Code Section. The third line down, it says greater than 4 units citywide. I think that should be 2 units based on...
Oh, you're in the code?
Yeah.
On the memo?
Page 10 of the packet.
Oh.
So under North Bend Municipal Code...
Oh, yeah, we changed that last time, and I forgot to change the memo. Thank you.
And do we have a clear definition between units and structure? Because I think of apartment units and single-family homes as structures, and we kind of use these terms loosely around, and I don't know if we have a hard definition. But I'd like to see some kind of uniformity or detail that says a unit is considered X, Y, and Z, or a structure is this. You know, I don't know how we're going to define it, but I just would like to see something that we can say consistently a unit is this. Or
a unit
in this document is either a single family home or a cottage unit of 4 or a cottage unit of 8. You know, I don't know.
A dwelling unit. Yeah, it's a dwelling unit. And then a structure could be any associated structure to the dwelling unit.
So a dwelling unit.
That would be 2 units. The structure would be...
One structure, 2 units.
Right. So, I'll have to look at where you see that and then kind of suggest some things.
I don't have anything firm. I guess maybe just, I don't know how we do our definitions.
They're in 1806, so let me look that. Unit.
Would the clarification be that the word dwelling unit should be interchanged as opposed to just the word unit? Does that clear it up?
Yes.
For you?
Yes, I understand. Yeah, whatever it's a home or a cottage, whether the cottage is individual or part of an eightplex, right? It's that one unit. And so we're saying these designs apply to just that one unit, not the entire overall structure of the 8 attached. So that's where I'm going to have more clarification, because if I have a cottage of 8, how do I want that roof line to be?
Right.
And how many gables? Because you know, see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm talking about a unit versus the structure.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
However many cottages are grouped together into one building, I don't want to make...
Well, this is only applying to single family.
Single family and cottage residential.
Cottage is a detached single family home. Small, though.
I thought cottage could be 8...
A cottage home is defined as a home, a unit, under right now 17, but you'll be seeing the cottage code coming up next. So it'll be around 1,500 square feet. And in the cottage zone, we allow duplexes, but if the duplex is proposed, it has to fall under the multifamily design standard. So this is when you have just one unit. This will never apply to 2 units. A structure with 2 units in it. That makes sense.
Which would be a multi-unit
right.
building.
And that's not a single-family unit. But I'll keep that in mind as I read through the final provisions for you and see what I can come up with to make sure it's clear.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
If I can move to page 12, section B1, it's architectural style and related matters. When I have 17 of 50 or 50 or more units or lots, and I have a builder that has 5 or 6 different home plans, can we have some flexibility between elevations and floor plans because they're still providing diversity in their stock? And so...
So,
why do we have to be so firm on this is the minimum, and you also have to have 3 elevations for each one, or interchange additional home plans in place of elevations?
Well,
we give some flexibility.
Right. The answer to that is you don't want to really do that.
Well, let me take a crack at it. So the front elevations, we're not even talking about how varied they are, first of all. So a front elevation case could be, okay, this window's a little higher pitch, this is a flat gable, that's an elevation change, right? I mean, that qualifies for our definition of change. It doesn't take much. So if we start restricting or really controlling how many of what it looks like, then we're going to have five different builders building exactly the same front just to fit the control device.
The reason why this is done is the key is the elevation. You're worried about what the house looks like from the public realm. But to successfully make the house to actually not result in just a little change, you have to couple it with the interior change, and then it's a necessity, because if you require the footprint inside to change, and then you also require the exterior, all of a sudden there's incentive for them to really make a change, because they can't just go, well, this is the same, so I'm going to just tip this roof this way this time versus that way, but it's the same house. So they play together from an architectural, like, success standpoint when you do this.
So it doesn't provide any more flexibility to say that.
You mean flexibility or...
I'm just saying, instead of trying to just change where the kitchen and family room are, or the living room and office, they flip-flop them. You know, that's going to change the elevation in front of the home. Saying if they have a totally different design that doesn't have an office and they have a big break room, you know, why not give them that option?
Well, here's what the architect.
Why is it so hard in the code?
This is what the architect said to that question. You certainly could do this, but it would reduce the proposed number of elevations. He says it would reduce the proposed number of elevations to 13 for the 17 to 50 and 18 for the 50 or more. It does create better diversity to what is there now, but less than what's proposed. So that doesn't make sense, right?
In my opinion, it is not
that difficult to create a handful of various elevation looks for a single floor plan, and what's proposed will give you more diversity and variety. So what's proposed gives more diversity and variety. So he's saying stick with what's proposed.
Okay. That's fine with
me. Hi.
Anybody else has to get... Any other thoughts on that before I move on?
I just throw in another 2 cents. The developer, when they get started on a plat of 15 houses or whatever, they're going to build to what the market is. And if it shows that one of them is selling quicker and better than the others, they're going to build those out first. Right? So they're going to have...
They'd rather keep that model and just change the elevation.
Right.
Because everybody wants to see that. All right, moving on. Okay. Building entries. Flipping the page. So, underneath the table of number of units of lots on page 13, building entries, which is section 2, is where I'm at. And if you read that, stoops may not, the fourth line down where it talks, stoops may not constitute more than 20%. Porches shall constitute useful areas not less than 80 square feet. And a minimum depth of 7 feet is measured at the porch floor from the wall of the house to the center of the supporting porch structure. Now, the paragraph below that, it says, for cottage homes, each unit shall include an attached front porch not less than 80 square feet minimum, with a minimum depth of 6 feet.
Oh, did I not hit?
So we have the 80
actually,
and
go, that's a good find. The cottage size is going to change based on, see, we're working on two different sections that kind of overlap. So the cottage, what you're going to see soon when you see the cottage standards, where the proposed depth, the porch will be, let me just get there. So we're consistent. The porch will be 7 feet wide and not less than 64 feet. Square feet. 64. So if we're consistent with what's being proposed, which in that'll be the Kirkland Cottage Code provision. So we're reducing the size of the house, so we have to correspond and of course do it.
So we're thinking about having the same depth of a porch on a cottage as well as a single family home. Okay.
Yeah, it's just gonna be not as the square footage, so won't be the,
you have a smaller house, so you don't want to have the porch.
Right, yeah.
Is this what Mr. D is talking, I guess, is to say that he's looking at 6 feet porches and 7 feet of porch.
He's saying that, yes. So I,
yeah, what he's saying is when you have the porch stick out, you have to consider how the roof is going to slope down to meet that. And so what he's saying is you won't have the same pitch. It's going to be a little bit flatter. So that comes into play with snow and, I guess, rain.
Yeah, so...
Whatever window is behind the porch, it gets shorter. If only because it's covered by the eave.
Well, it's exponential. Every foot of porch out in front of the house is exponential to the second floor roof. Think about how that's going to work. Because the rooms that are stacked on top of it.
They could split. Have a lower roof or upper roof.
So, I mean, it's how you could do it. But it's a very costly foot to the rest of the house.
I've seen in Tanner with the split.
Well, yes, I am.
What made us think we needed 7 feet instead of six?
Well, the city council reviewed the Kirkland's Cottage Code, and they felt that they're going to move to 7 feet for cottages. That's what's going to come to you guys based on their direction for you to consider. So it doesn't make sense to require a bigger porch on a smaller house if you're not going to hold the larger houses to the same accountability. The architect says he doesn't really understand the reasoning. He did talk about the fact that, 6 foot is a minimum. And seven, and the bigger the better. They can be done because we know Kirkland's code's been implemented in Kirkland for a 7 foot porch. So
in support of this, I have some cedar rockers on my front porch, and I measured, if I want to go back without hitting the house, and I want to have some room in front. Better walking distance to go around those rocking chairs, right?
Right.
Other than that, you can store more kids' bikes and toys.
Or right next to the cars in the driveway.
Right.
Yeah. I think we're coming back to the porches now would be utility rather than window dressing. A nice little railing with a big splash move under the canal. I will never want to use it, but realize that these six-foot porches are really too small. And I have not really put some real furniture out there and really enjoy the space. And so then you're talking about roof lines. I'm not an architect. I don't know what that means. There must be some structural changes in Portland. Maybe you have a deeper attic. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying, I'll do an extreme. If you went from 6 feet to 60 feet, eventually that roof starts to just get flat.
Remember the 50s when we had a flat roof?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Maybe 50%.
Right.
Yeah. Those aren't permitted in
yeah, I know that.
Now, one thing to think about is, let's do this, because I do have the architect scheduled for your meeting next meeting. Okay, he's going to come to your meeting. So I almost want to say, let's make a list of the real, you know, so I can say, hey, they want to talk porches, and what is the, you know, what is the real difficulty, you know, because John did submit a comment. We want to make sure we address it properly, so you can have that conversation with him. So as we go tonight, I'm going to take notes as to what kind of topics we think he should be prepared to, and porches will be one, you know, because in his just dialogue to me, he does talk about the depth is important because of what Gary just said. That's, you know, you want to have that depth.
Okay.
Yeah. And we just naturally assume that if you have a 6-7 foot porch on average, it's going to span the width of the human portion of the house, and probably include the front door, leaving the garage. So that's about 10 feet. So, you know, but there is no provision as to width. And you don't want to get too prescriptive, but these are all the things we could talk to him about. So I'll just note that we want to talk about porch. I think you did a good job pointing out that I didn't, you know, we had to make it consistent. And we'll kind of directly have him speak to...
Okay. So cottage units are going to be not 80, but 64 square feet.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Anything further? My next thing, window type section B5.
Page?
14. Five window types. Window types and window placement should be seen as an opportunity to provide interest in individually amongst building facades, especially street facing facades and those in public view. If you look at subdivisions and how they're being built, and you commonly see the back of the house either facing the public street and the community street is on the other side, or you have backs of houses to the next back of house, I want to argue that we should consider the front and the back equally as important. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So we should have the facades both on the front and the rear of the house.
As it relates to windows. I'm not sure I understand your question.
So, we're talking about the building facades, especially street-facing facades, and those in the public view. So I'm saying the public view, when your house is, the North Bend Way runs here, and your community street is on the other side of that. Your house is facing the community street, but North Bend Way sees the back of the house. Okay, that's equally as important. Also in that subdivision, you'll have one house that has its back here, and then the neighbor's back of the house is over here. So when you're both out in your houses, you're going to see each other's back of the house, and you should be provided that nicer view as well. So I want to argue that we don't want to just say front, but front and rear. Thoughts?
What would you afford to build here?
I don't see trim, you know, $200 and a day difference. I don't see it as material.
I think you'll find that the cost of houses will jump with that kind of a 360 showcase. So that's not like I agree with you on this one. The level of space elements will begin to rise with that. Which may be affordable. Just to share our best insight. But we don't got to consider the cost we're talking about.
Aren't there, if I remember right, there's something in the code regarding setbacks from arterial streets that are not associated with the neighborhood. It was to prevent that same thing you're describing where the backyards all line up on an unrelated road that's not accessed from the neighborhood. Isn't there, could help me on that, was there something?
From how does that apply to?
Well, one of the, I'm agreeing with what you're saying, but I'm also thinking, when is that going to happen in a new development? Because I thought we had something already in place that kept, you know, the concept of backyards all lining up on a busy road.
Yeah, oh, sorry, I misunderstood you. We do not require, or we require, we do not allow more than three homes to back up on the street. And I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. We also, there are certain cases where you get, we call it double frontage. And we are saying that when you have a double frontage, you have to provide 15 feet of landscaping between the back and of the house and that street.
Okay.
And
so
then
the midway backyard thing.
So they'd have landscaping, but the second story would be visible for 5-10 years.
Well, you could say this. Oh no, it already does this. To give dimension to the building walls, provide shadow lines. All street facing or street visible windows and doors shall be trimmed. So in that case, I think we actually could require the trim. So right now, the only sides and rears that you wouldn't see is when they're just backing each other.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Yes,
sir. I had a chance to re-experience Midwest Company almost a month ago. And walking around the neighborhoods back in Cedar Rapids, every street is just canopy trees. These are old 1920 homes. And I began to realize that back in that period of construction, homes were built one by one. They were a complete home. And it wasn't one of 50. So each builder, even the owner that was having it, had a complete home built. Front, back, sides was a complete home vision that you're looking for. And then a year later, another house was built next door. So it just fills up slowly. And each home was built as a separate architectural design. And that's what I think the council is looking for. Somehow magically make that happen when this, the way you build homes today, we have to build a number before we come to scale. And they begin to look alike, no matter how different your life you try to make. Because they're all built the same era. There's no differences going on. So it's frustrating to try to force differences when, in fact, it's all being built at the same time.
Sure. I think, you know, I'm thinking about from the status point of view and how our city looks.
Yeah.
To have our windows trimmed is a nicer quality.
I'm just saying that when you're looking at the back of your house, that's when you kind of cut your corner. You don't have the facade, you don't have the back porch. You have the front porch, your back porch, you don't have a side porch. You know, for that use of the house, you can't just put that use in the front. That's where some people will stall and say, your neighbors, and kind of just let your back of your house just become the back. I butt my shirt up nice and careful, but I don't care what that back looks like.
That's one way to look at it. All right.
I have two mirrors in my house, and I use it.
Gary, I'll back you up if you want to run with this. I think it's a good idea. The language can't hurt anything, and it's a lot of bang for the buck. And if I'm looking at the back of somebody's house, and it's the windows are wrapped, it looks different. And maybe because the people paid $200 more in the purchase price, they're going to get a nicer lawnmower.
You know, I look at how it's written, and boy, you're going to say all street-facing or street-visible windows. So it is only the back-to-back. You know, that's a nice to have. It's not as visible.
You know, why don't we do this? Why don't I'm going to put this down as a yeah? Because really, what we're talking about is what's the cost. And what's the added cost to a per home to trim out the back?
Play devil's advocate with that. If we force the developer to spend another $1,000 in the back of the house, and he normally would wrap the interior windows, just moves the money outside. Right? And that's the game.
don't know if they would do that because the
you get my
fire. Yes, yeah, somewhere it's going to come out. Yeah.
Okay, I think that's a great question for our architect who will know the exact number on what that does, and then you can consider whether that's a fair requirement based on what you want to do.
Further down on page 14, under siding materials, I'm sorry I'm not that smart, and I didn't have time to look it up on the internet, but what is T111 siding?
Yeah, it's just not.
It's pressed.
Let me get to. I'll get
you the material that's been stamped in to look like siding.
Kind of like party backer board.
But you put it up like a sheet of plywood.
It's got like tenant spaces and pieces of stuff. Kind of cool in terms of
it absorbs moisture over time, starts to wobble and warp. And I think that's really easy enough. This is the business. That's all they
have. It's like the tough shit material.
And replace it all.
To use this language, if you had a whole side of a house done that way,
it's considered like.
Not what you want.
It's kind of considered grooved plywood.
Got it.
And so if you want, we can have the architect give you a little bit better description of why it's really not a good idea to allow. But
now that I know what it is, and we say it can be used in limited fashion, does it fit within our environment and weather? Is that kind of hold up?
Well, some of the pictures here. Oh, no, it is grooved plywood, yeah. Accent fashion. So, you know, let's have him talk to that, because, you know, it might not. My instinct is right now, I don't think it's a high quality. So if you trim out the house, if you build a quality house like you wouldn't put this on anyway. So, I'm trying, like, would you even put it on underneath a bay window? Maybe. That might be it.
I'm pretty sure about the history of this group. But it is up to somebody. Embedded in this whole millions of boards being, they have to take it all back and they have to work.
Now, that's the line side, the vertical side. T111 is a sheet of plywood.
Yeah, but it's manufactured to get a look of jointed boards. Just tile material, right? Snap dab was during the reconstruction period, World War II material. I think there's so many houses that they just threw it up.
Right.
And walked away.
Right.
4 years later, it's all coming off the walls.
Right.
Okay. So I'm going to go on then to page 16 and talk about garage setbacks. And if you want to refresh yourself with it, so you can have 50% flush and 50% setback. Somebody came in and talked about having angled garages and side loaded, so they're not in line with the front. They're kind of at an angle, right, coming out.
That's allowed. So the only time this comes into play.
But where does that fit in here? Is like what kind of setback is that? Or I don't know what it fits under. So does it meet in line or does it meet a setback garage?
Yeah, let me get online real quick. Sorry, you guys, I'm...
I can bet it on the side. It's flush to the street. I can bet that would be curved in my driveway. Well, it is in my driveway, but it's actually 90 degrees to the house.
So those have... Side entry garages have a different setback. Because you don't see the garage door from the street. You see the side. Usually it's a nice window. And I just don't remember off the top of my head what that setback is. So let me check that, because if...
Should that be in this section?
We definitely could clarify the intent.
Or at least reference wherever the side of the section is.
Yeah.
It seems like it forces porches on half the houses too, right?
Say that again?
Well, they're required anyway. But it requires a minimum
80 square feet.
And we're going to add 7 feet to that, I think, just to make that clear. So it's consistent with the other section. So I made a note to make sure.
Is the front porch considered the front wall? If you're talking about 5 foot setback.
It's front wall of the house.
So the porch is the front wall rather than the actual wall.
Not the way the code's written right now. The code right now says the setback is to the front wall of the house. So if the setback is 20 feet right now, we allow the porch to protrude into that setback. So we're measuring to basically the concrete foundation wall. The council is actually talking about not allowing porches to extend out into that. I think you always want to provide that incentive. I think porches are, you want to incentivize porches. And builders sell square footage. So if you don't allow the porch to protrude, there's not a, you know, they're going to have to set the porch back at the 20, and then so the living's, you know, there's just, it's just starting to get tight.
Well, the porch is an accessory. It doesn't function hold the house over.
No, it's what?
I think it's a porch is an accessory. It's an extension.
It is an accessory.
Yeah, the porch is not a barrier wall. You don't have anything that the porch is going to keep the house up.
Right. Okay, I'm trying to stick with the garage question, then, because I want to make sure I answer. So I'm trying to.
But my question was, does the setback begin with the house or with the porches? 5 foot setback.
The house. Yeah.
So the porch. It's another 6 feet, so it's actually 11 feet from the street, from the front part of the house.
Right now, the code says you build the house at 20 feet, and the porch can protrude 5 feet into that. So you could have a porch at 15 feet back from back of sidewalk, yeah.
But with the garage being set back no further than 5 feet. Front wall.
Right.
You add that 5 to the porch, whatever it is. Usually you've got 13 feet or something.
Right. Yeah, when you have the porch and, so for 50%, you're going to have a porch and the garage setback. So you're going to have, yeah.
So that's what's looking for you.
Right.
It's not like the garage right off the street. That's not the
thing. No.
And
no.
You've effectively added 5 feet to the driveway. Setback.
You know, instead of me trying to find this, if they're consistent, Gary, why don't I do this for the garages? I'm going to make a note to
either refer to that section or
refer side entry garage or state it. Okay, and I'll come back when we come back with the final version with the right stuff.
Do we have any porches smaller than 80 square feet?
I can't say off the top of my head.
I just wonder why they call it out here, because it's a porch. It's got to be 80 square feet. If I've seen anything smaller, I don't know about it.
Right. We're going to add the 7-foot provision that you have in the other one, so it's consistent. So, that was where is that? That was kind of the. We've already talked about the setbacks. Did we conclude where you guys wanted to go with? Yeah, we did. Okay.
You actually kind of said exactly what I was going with, is that with this, we're trying to create the same feel as a community that has developed slowly over 60 or 70 years, with the iconic granddad who added half a house, we felt like, and you have that kind of, trying to do that all from the beginning on a large scale. So, I get what you're trying to do here, but just wondering if we can
I think architecturally, even back in the 50s, if a builder built three houses, he built up three houses in a row that looked very similar. I mean, it's the nature of nature of construction. As builders got more and more, as the economies of scale played into it more and more, the subdivisions got larger and larger, and so that was turned into, instead of having three, houses that look similar next to maybe two or three, now all of a sudden now we're getting 50, 100, some places 300. So what you really hope is which I actually believe, as a city planner, is one of the benefits of North Bend, is we do have a number of different builders building here. So you do have more diversity than the average city that's getting developed through the production building age. Part of that, too, is we have our parcels. People either have to consolidate parcels. There's just not a lot of big swath of land. So Cedar Falls, for example, was 100 and something. That was one. And originally John Day was going to buy 40 of those and then opted out. So that would have been a perfect scenario where you have two builders building in, that. We have Main View next door, and then we have John Day. And so you're really actually getting diversity, but it's more in pockets of 20 or, in it. So I think you've hit a pretty good provision here. You're always, for the reality of the fact we are going to be dealing with production building to a certain degree, even, because you want to regulate the baselines, because, I call it the lowest common denominator, but you don't want to stifle creativity. And I think you're hitting a pretty good balance.
I see what you're saying. As you're talking about Cedar Falls, just across the street is a Maloney Grove, where they have this very modern way.
Yeah.
Those patterns will be totally different.
Yeah.
Right? I guess that's awesome.
Yeah.
And then Sideview, another older neighborhood, but still in charm.
Right.
I think we're doing that.
Yeah, we're lucky because, and I think about Snoqualmie. I mean, Snoqualmie doesn't have that diversity because they were built by one master plan and the developer was a builder. I mean, phase one was a little more diverse than phase two. We don't have that because we have a lot of independent small parcels selling to different builders, and North Bend has a lot of different builders interested. So we are getting that diversity. It's just not the one-offs or the two-offs like we did in the 50s.
So along those lines of that discussion, do you have any concerns when you have 50 or more homes being developed and only 5 floor plans in that home?
Well, I like this. I think that if we do too many, we will get a lot of pushback. So a mixture of four plants, the fact that you call it out so they can't appear.
Yeah.
So there's the same house to split. And using a different elevation. It's more the seeing what they're trying to do in this, in attempting to, through code, create the feeling of the community that actually develops for 50 years. But I do wonder if there's some things that we might do to allow a little bit more variation.
Such as?
The harvesting is actually something that's interesting, and I'm wondering, and this may be completely like has been discussed and thrown out. We talked about the bigger porches. I grew up with family members in the South that had really big porches. On hot days is what they lived on. And is there a way that we can get a mix so that we have some of those larger porches that create a different feel without making it something that the builder doesn't want to do? And where I look at that is this question of how much we're going to allow them to kind of infringe on that setback. And if, would there be a way, you know, as we do with the side of tree garages, to say a certain number in a subdivision of this size may do an eight-foot porch that, you know, comes in 3 feet, or as they're switching around, I don't know about how far in, but to kind of create an incentive, mm-hmm. and also to create a different look mm-hmm. from the street, because you'd have some like that, some not. And that might be another way to kind of break up the segments in a way that might not be a huge difference for them in terms of the design.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it's possible. Not
yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it really comes down to, you know, like Main View doesn't really have a porch. They put all their porches on the back, and that's how they market their house. There's this great outdoor living space in your backyard. And they have a pretty large covered area. I would consider a porch. It's more like a real large stoop, because it's just a concrete covered area. So I guess let me ponder that, because you know, we have one of the notes is to talk porches with the architect. I just, you know, everything's got to fit under the roof line too. So your question I think has a lot of, I think you need to run that by a true architect. Right. Right.
It's almost like the little room that's been tacked on.
Right.
The house, and they also tend to wrap around.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking when you were saying that, actually, as I was thinking, well, it'd be great to incentivize a wraparound porch on corners. Because those are beautiful. And corner, and you know, they just stopped doing that. So let's really dial in the porch conversation with Leroy. And see what he would suggest. I'll run this all by him so he can come with maybe some suggestions, or we will.
We could become the city of porches.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and I think that's a great way to promote another form of diversity, is to have that wrap around. I'm just trying to think of what setting might it fit best in, and how would it be effective. And, you know, it's certainly an option for anybody to do. Has anybody done it today? Does it fit with any of the designs today? Or do they have roof garages or, you know, side issues where they have narrow lot lines and you can't come that close to your neighbor's lot line, right? So our 15 feet side setback, right?
Well, you wouldn't want to do a wrap on an internal lot, but, you know, like, one of my thoughts is, like, it doesn't really make a big difference if you're only extending the porch by a foot. So the first question I have for Leroy is, what is a normal large porch? I mean, we know six, seven is about as small as you want to go and still have it usable. So what's the next, like, typical size porch? And if it's 10, let's say, then we say for porches that are extend more than 7 feet, they may extend in the setback by, you know, not more than 5 feet, and that would give you an offer to an incentive for a large porch. But what that number is, I think I'd love to have that conversation with Leroy. He was unfortunately not able to come tonight, but like I said, he's scheduled for your next meeting.
I'm going to throw another question to Leroy when he gets here.
So
If on the corner lots or wider lots or some other definition that we've used, I think it's cool too. If we allowed some incentive, then builders would probably say, okay, that's a nice little benchmark for my neighborhood. I'll do a few of those. But one of these is going to come back really quickly is impervious surface calculations. You're talking about a 10-foot porch or an 8-foot porch on two sides of the house. Probably going to be the same, roughly the equivalent of the existing roof, depending on the size of the house. I'm curious how we could get around that and keep the incentive.
Yeah.
Maybe some kind of water storage, something that we help take care of somehow that's not going to cost the developer a ton of money. That'll shut it down pretty quick.
Well, you could say something like for porches that are larger than 7 feet, but not more than X, that portion of the porch shall not be included in the lot coverage or something like that.
You can get away with it.
I mean, yeah, in the end, you also have to create a code that you can administer. And, you know, when planners are dealing with every house coming in, you're like, so, but that is actually a good cause and effect of creating a larger porch. And, you know, if your lot coverage is only 50% or whatever. We would want to address that. So
I lived in a neighborhood where there was a variety of lot sizes and home values. And I felt lucky to live around homes that were a lot more expensive than my parents could afford. And again, there's part of the neighborhood that in order if looking at our lot sizes to begin with, I think we have a variety of lot sizes within, say, a 4-home lot. We could actually build a stellar home and most lesser homes. So you have a variety of quality as well as that would bring different people into contact with one another and provide for diverse communities.
Right.
You can today build cottage in low density residential, and in cottage you can do multifamily, and in multifamily you can do cottage. That promotes some of that mix. Are you speaking?
That's what I'm talking about.
Or are you saying you should just have a lot more flexibility in all the zones? And if so, would that be included here?
I think that's what I was trying to refer to back. They're building single, even homes that filled the neighborhood for a 5-year period, and they had a variety of lot sizes. They had a double lot, they had a lot dimension on the building, which happened. It wasn't stopping. They didn't have a code that existed yet.
You mean the requiring different sizes and that?
Size lots and what the zone details.
Well, as we're talking about this, my note was, I mean, I want to take this slow enough we do it right. So as we're talking about this, I had literally just pulled up where we include that, and I had originally thought I was going to take it and then put it in here and then delete it from the other section. But we opted not to do that. But off the cuff, I'm kind of thinking that's a better decision because they really do play together. And there's a section called lot layout and design, and it's only like it's a small section where we do talk about lot width and lot size variation. And I almost think it does make sense to put it forward in this, and maybe we call it a single family. So, not to probably bring a lot more next time, I think we're going to do that. Because it really actually, over the long haul, will save you guys a lot of time because you're going to just address it all at once. So
would we do a new public hearing?
Yeah. We would.
So, I'm going to take what you've said and see if I can feed it back to a place that actually allows it. So if you had a neighborhood of, or a development of, let's say, 25 lots, just to pick a number, and you allowed diversity in the lot sizes, before it was platted, you said, hey, we've got calculations that go from a 5,000 square foot lot to 25,000 square foot lot. And then you let the developer figure out where the lots are. Developer then looks at mitigation of issues and streets and sidewalks are required, whatever, and then the land value becomes the value that starts the house. So if you did it from a land use perspective rather than some design plan, that can be kind of cool. It'd take a while to build it out because it wouldn't happen overnight. But
that's all right. That's a lot. That's a lot. I thought I'd force it.
Yeah.
So I could like put on top of it.
Yeah.
That's not how it's gonna work.
Yeah. With the big guys first, it'll happen faster. If the little guys build first, the last lot will be there, the big one. Right? It's cool though.
Yeah. I have a question about pricing. That could be such a dramatic shift to the look of the entire development. Mix up fencing, depending on where the fence is located. There's so many crucial elements to that alone.
Fencing, yeah. So, our fencing section's a different section, but what were your thoughts on fencing?
You can get really consistent with it, but add to the sameness or mix it up. So, based on where these fences are going, some homes can have to, some can't.
Right now, our fencing code is pretty, like, we let fencing. First of all, fencing doesn't require a permit,
okay.
So it's really hard for us to really, like, but we do say in the front yard, you can't have a 6-foot fence, because, so we say a front yard shall have a minimum 4-foot fence, which, and then you could do your 6-foot, you know, fence for your dogs or whatever in the back. So we don't really want to see kind of like what we have across the street, it's just, you know, on the street anymore. That's at least how the code's written now. But, that being said, you can put up a fence without a permit, so it's hard to administer.
Mm-hmm.
Which, fences usually self-regulate themselves in a way. We don't really see a lot of issues with fences, or a lot of sameness. Yeah.
If you have a housing association that,
yeah,
has a prescription fence.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody ever live in a neighborhood that didn't have or didn't allow fences? You mentioned the Midwest.
No fences in the front yards.
Period. So when you go down the street, you notice, okay, house, normal driveway, sidewalk, but when you go look down the side yard, there's no divider, maybe some vegetation, but when you step out into the backyard, you're looking out across, nobody's got a fence. Mm-hmm. It's all wide open.
Yes.
I wasn't thinking of Chicago.
I was just wondering, like, in the cottage housing, it seems like that's one of the ideas.
Yeah.
Vegetation as your strength. Right?
Yep.
So I'm going to end up probably saying we're going to bring lot layout and design, which is, we'll add like a page and a half to consider. We'll probably intro it next meeting along with the architect giving you walking through the continuation of this conversation. And then we'll have one more public hearing, which takes us actually to September, believe it or not. So that's where we'll be on this. And hopefully by September, we can get a good recommendation out. But then you'll have already addressed the lot layout and width, and you'll be done, which is a huge part of what we were wanting to address, or at least City Council wanted you guys to address. So let's do that. Yeah.
Okay, anything further on North Bend 18.34.50? Okay, let's move on to item number 6 on our agenda, which is the introduction on amendments to Chapter 18.50, North Bend Municipal Code Low Impact Development Demonstration Projects.
Okay, so, let me get to the page. Yeah. Okay. So basically, I'm just going to kind of point to the map here. We have a scenario in our code right now that allows this parcel
which is a very nicely tree piece of Rouse Anchorage, to participate in what we call a low impact development demonstration. It was both of these, actually. And the reason why we chose that parcel as a test for this ordinance is because of the trees and the opportunity to really create a different culture than just clear cut and build. We ultimately went out for a grant to buy that through what we called Partnering for a Park, where King County, the city, SciView came together, and we came up with $250,000 apiece to go out for two grants, $1 million grant and a $1 million match grant, and another grant to get us to $1 million because we were only at $7,500. So we ended up getting recommended for full funding through this Conservation Futures grant, which is really unbelievable. So as a result, we are in the process of most likely buying that. We have, it would probably most likely close in September. So as a result of that, we no longer need this code section to apply to that particular parcel. So we started thinking about, you know, you guys created that zone called the Constrained Residential. And it was for areas of town that are kind of either constrained by the floodplain or otherwise valuable, environmentally valuable, because it has unique qualities. So what we started looking at is, where in our city do we have a lot of trees, and where could we create a unique atmosphere to live in that's maybe different than what's going up where it's already been farmland or what have you. And the only part in town that's really forested is this parcel is truly forested and zoned that large lot. So it's cottages, we're doing a different thing there. So what we started looking at is that parcel, and we said, okay, you just created a 2 DU per acre with minimum lot size of 18,000 square feet. You don't really want to do curb, gutter, planter strip, and sidewalk on it. You know, it kind of is an odd relationship when you have more of a rural large lot and then you put this urban sidewalk street there. So we kind of started thinking about it and thought, well, what if we apply this code to that and allowed meandering streets that were designed to be a little more rural in nature, and the incentive for a builder to want to do that is there's a lot less infrastructure when you're not building curb, gutter, planter, strip, and sidewalk. And so in lieu of that heavy infrastructure, you know, we could do tree preservation, meander it more like a modern-day Beaux-Arts style, if you've ever been to Beaux-Arts in Bellevue, where there is a lot of tree preservation. The houses kind of integrate with that, and the roads are really kind of...
Lucky.
Yeah. So what we want to introduce is that concept. We want to... We staff are kind of sharing this with you at its very original early stage, so we might even bring additional amendments through. But we wanted to get this going because there is somebody interested in this parcel, and if you know, one thing about city planning is right now anybody could come and invest with the standards we have in place, and then we're all stuck with it, the developer and the city. If we really want to see something rural, small town, or rural, small towns kind of like this, so the more rural in nature, you know, we felt we better be proactive and get this in front of you guys to find out, first of all, is there any heartburn to it? And second of all, I ran it by council, and everybody seems to be giving me the go-ahead to bring it to you guys and get this process going. So I do know the developers that are interested, you know, at some point they need to know the rules that they're playing by. So the goal would be to have this topic maybe addressed and out of Planning Commission by your first meeting in September, and then approved by October for the council, and then they could submit based on the standards in place.
So I'll open it up to the Planning Commission. Any additional thoughts you'd like to share?
I've looked through a little bit, and I like, in general. I didn't see anything about our riparian buffers or setbacks. Is it? Is there nothing unique? Because this parcel is
on the river.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. That is something where so the they will have to abide by all the riparian buffering, which is 100-foot buffering from the river. This parcel is unique, so there is one feature we're kind of going to maybe look a little deeper in that we haven't had a chance to. But right now we're saying the buffer from the river would be the same. But we might end up with a creative solution for kind of a benching issue on the parcel itself, which is down towards the river. Yeah, which makes it hard to build on. We just haven't been able to dial in on what that really is yet.
It's pretty steep.
So are we talking about?
East of Wood River. East of Wood River.
It could be a good opportunity east to protect.
We are talking about that.
Yeah.
What's the zone?
That's the half acre, 18,000 square foot lots, no more than 2 per acre.
In the wide area, east of the hash area?
The hash area is the area we're talking about.
Yeah. What's the zoning for the east of that?
That's King County, rural King County. That's outside city limits, not our jurisdiction.
I know that.
Oh, urban reserve. Which I think is 5 acre
lots.
Well,
there's a school there, too.
So the
school property, I'm only asking the question.
Yeah.
We don't want to go if we're not forced to do this, but we're bloody up against the forest zone. That's not a forest zone.
No.
In the way.
No, that's another King County home and then a school next to that.
Okay, so it's rural 10, rural 5.
I think it's R5, UR5. Yeah. So, let me think what I want to say.
Scott, hold on.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to know the topography going to the site, but it'll be something we could consider putting in here if we wanted to. Because there's a lot of protection of habitat, kind of in general, what I read, but nothing specific about the riparian area. So,
okay.
Maybe an area where the people there want to create, probably wouldn't be a public park, but a little area.
A homeowners association park, yeah.
Yeah. At least preserve the view. I mean, I'm sure maybe the 100-foot setback would do that, but as you're going down the river, you look up and it's the same as it is now. It's not like, oh, there's a bunch of homes there.
Mm-hmm.
Protecting the existing view.
So back up to the acquisition part, where the city will become the owner of, is it two parcels?
Yeah.
And one of those was designated high density.
With a density restriction of 45.
Right. So just in that part of the analogy, what are we trading for density-wise? I know the deal is underway, but I'm just trying to follow the logic.
Well, I think I understand your question. I would separate the what are you trading from a density standpoint, because you've already zoned the city the way you've zoned it. So
right.
They are already stuck with 2 DUs per acre. They have the opportunity to walk in today and build it with a 54-foot road with 2 5-foot planter strips and 2 sidewalks and then 18,000 square foot lots on it.
Yep.
The other parcel had an opportunity to utilize this or build standard development. This was not required. Okay. So the fact that this is zoned, we're not trading anything for these guys because their zoning is already set. The other one is, yes, we're buying out property that otherwise would accommodate about 70 homes. But you got to remember, your zoning doesn't stay stagnant. I mean, you buy out 70 on this side, but you've also downzoned in your city too without that question.
Right.
So, and then you've also
upzoned a lot of overlays. So in the end, you know,
I get it. I'm just trying to. Yeah. I mean, my mind says, okay, wait a minute. The city's promoted wherever it came from, basically the elimination of buildable lands, turned into a park, right? Is that where that land is headed?
It's going to be a regional trailhead and mountain bike park. Okay. Yes.
So 70 units trade for a park. Is that right?
That's the result, but I don't know if the trade's the word, but yeah.
Okay. And then if we, this other strip that's being proposed for a different zone, what's the number of units that probably result?
So I think this parcel's 50 acres. And 50 acres, so you could get a max of 100 homes, regardless of what happens tonight. This does not change the zoning. What it does is it changes the character of what would be built.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess the circle back to the point, I remember when we created that zone for that unique, heavily treated piece of property.
Yeah.
I'm happy to see that it's not just going to vanish when the city decides to buy the land along with the partners.
Right.
But that's the point I was leading to.
You mean this vanish?
Right.
Yeah. No, this
so,
was...
So this concept would... allow the zone to survive, basically. Otherwise, it's a moot point.
And then, well, you know, long term, what I'm thinking is, if this works and we like it, you can change this from demonstration to CLDR zoning regs.
Right.
Maybe not so much on the tree preservation, because there's not as many parcels that are heavily treed like this, but it still would be feasible to.
Yeah.
So this is a good baby step to see what it looks like.
Yeah.
I'm actually intrigued. I want to know more about this because it could be an interesting thing to use, perhaps modified for other areas that we're encouraging more preservation of areas and avoiding it. Also, just maintaining areas and have that real character.
By the way, how did the city council get around not running this purchase by us? We never heard about it.
The Planning Commission doesn't make decisions on purchasing property.
Oh, I know.
But what did happen is we had an opportunity to apply for a grant. And so we were given the okay to go ahead and apply for the grant. But to apply for the grant, we needed to have match funds. So what we did is we built a partnership to create the match funds. So for $250,000, you're going to get a $2 million piece of property. I'd like that in my personal investment world.
Well, if we had Uncle Sam in the backyard, we probably could pull it off once in a while.
Right.
Question for Ryan. This would be a good thing to talk about the firewise.
Next dollar to work. The whole thing got me thinking about firewise. This is the kind of interaction between developed community and natural community. You've got to be thinking about firewise concepts here. This is exactly what firewise is designed for.
What I'll do, Dick, on this one, why don't I do a lot of research on firewise and bring some work with the developer and get their input on it, and then bring some language there that can kind of address concerns that you have.
Can I edge in the direction of Little Bain?
Somewhat?
Linda Bain.
Oh, Linda Bain, okay.
You know where
Okay.
She is
the Okay. Email me or call me with her phone number if you have it, otherwise I'll look her up.
So, Commissioner Ryan, if I may, I guess I would be open to the discussion while we have the tree preservation, allow for the tree trimming and stress that plantings be removed from close to the house as you are in this perennial setting. So you want to minimize your fire dangers. So I don't know exactly what the requirements are, but I
building materials be one roof would be definitely compatible with that helping. Just basic.
Other
You would give up the tree and have a cedar shake roof under a fir tree.
Any other thoughts or concerns for
Well, I'm a little intrigued by this root zone idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's down on page here. Page 28, top two. So a paragraph H, soil compaction should be avoided. There are tree zones, tree root zones.
What page?
28.
Okay.
It's in right near the top, paragraph H. So start to use soil compaction should be avoided.
Oh, right.
There are tree root zones, and then they give kind of a formula.
Yeah.
For that. And my presumption is that this particular area is probably second growth.
Mm-hmm.
The log before, at least maybe 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Looks about that.
But your trees in there are probably 10 feet.
Seems like, yeah.
More or less 18 to 20 inches in diameter.
Yeah.
So if you've got a 20 inch tree, DBH 20 and 20 inches, you're going to create a 20-foot radius around that tree. That is a no-touch area because of the root zone. You're estimating that the root zone of that tree is spreading out 20 feet. That's going to continue to spread.
Yeah.
We all know the Douglas firs don't go down and go out.
Right.
So you're going to have a lot of root mingling going on. So where are we getting this formulation from?
Where are we getting that provision?
Yeah, the 1 foot per inch.
That's through our arborist who helped us write the regulations. Keep in mind, it only applies if you're developing around the tree. So one of the most successful ways to accomplish tree preservation is just groves that are in tracks, and then maybe the 18,000 square foot lot might only have a tree or two on it in the backyard with the radii. But the actual, the trees that are, in the public right of way or in little groves can it wouldn't necessarily wouldn't.
No, I think it's fascinating about the overkill.
Oh, okay. So just where did we got it from?
I think about the overkill. Maybe it's in a grove.
Mm-hmm.
All those roots are with each other, so they're fine. I'm saying the individual tree out there. It's been there for a number of years. It's probably pretty roomful. I have a couple of large overgrowth in my property. I measure it out tonight. I'd have an 80-foot radius around the tree. The trees don't extend that far.
Yeah, I understand. We did get this from our arborist. And one thing is the trees on the exterior are probably pretty customized, urban, yeah. But once you start taking any of those out, it changes wind patterns, and so there's usually some type of blowdown. So he that is what he suggested?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. It's very enlightening, by the way. I think it's great.
Yeah.
But I think that would be from the exterior, from the trees that are on the edges.
Yeah.
I think when you get inside, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just saying that.
Or should there be a maximum radius? That measurement up to a maximum.
Go trees. Don't keep it standing that way. It's totally mutual ground for the state and the counties.
When it comes to tree preservation, I do strongly suggest we rely on, I think that we don't have any, I don't think, old growth on the site. So I think we're talking about second growth timber. And that's the same as what's up on that hill, and that what he walked the site with us, and hasn't walked this site, but he walked, So we can get more from him. We are going to add a few more provisions as he's given us on this.
I think it's unlikely. I'm not criticizing.
Yeah, no, I know you're not.
I'm not criticizing that, but the one I am criticizing is that provision that there'll be two
trees left per lot.
Oh, that was just me talking. There's no provision that says there'll be two trees left per lot.
Yeah,
where?
There's a requirement of having a minimum of two trees on a lot.
Where's that one?
That one's in.
I don't remember that one.
Over here, significant trees, page 27.
Well.
Paragraph B. Talking about significant trees. In no case.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry, I forgot about that.
Trees. Trees die.
Well, then you just need to replant.
Wind has to stop blowing, Jack. That's what we're saying.
Then you just replant.
Yeah. But I mean, it says, under no case shall the two trees remaining significant trees. Removed.
Right. That's what we're proposing.
Should say by steel chainsaw.
The reason is you're giving a development an opportunity to develop at a lower infrastructural standard on the street in exchange for tree preservation. The reason why when you build curb, gutter, planter strip, sidewalk, pipe and pond, that infrastructure does not allow a lot of flexibility for nature to integrate. When you allow a meandering 24-foot road with a bio channel that could include a cedar tree or not, that allows for that. But what we don't want to do is have this treed atmosphere and then every parcel looks just bare and stark except for the house. So we are saying, yes, this is going to look more like Wood River. Yeah.
I just think that almost reflects the political statement.
Yeah. Oh, it's not. No, it's a standard.
Pristine trees on the left or whatever. I don't think that's a number that I'll take you to take a hard line on. I don't think if you've got an 18,000 square foot lot, half an acre, you're probably going to have at least 85 organic trees in second growth sitting there.
Yeah.
You're not going to have to worry about
actually
getting down your last two trees.
That's fine. Then if we never have to worry about that, it's great. But I can tell you, if somebody comes in and they want to take down their last tree, city planners and developers like predictability. We need to be able to give them a clear standard of what the city expects. So if it's not there, we say two.
So if it's qualified the trees as being living or healthy.
Oh, we never could make them keep it. Hazard trees are different. If somebody came in and they had two trees left on their property and both were dry rot and rot.
I'm just showing the language is confusing.
But
so you might have a lot of qualified.
But we have another section of the code that relates to cutting down trees, and so if we don't make them keep up a hazard tree, what we say is you have to just replace them. So you would say, yeah, you can take it down. You just need to put a new tree up so you have two trees on your property.
You're just asking. I'm just telling you what I got in this chart.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it.
But I thought the diameter, essentially the diameter is created up in the cell in terms of the inch trees.
I think one thing we have to discuss is soil compaction may be related to the site.
Yeah.
Building.
Yeah.
Not just driving your tractor somewhere around it. I was assuming it was not piling dirt up 2 feet above the ground. And, the tree will be fine, right?
That is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. So some developers might do that. Especially on the there are plenty of trees that support the lawn. That support the lawn.
Again, except for two.
Is there a fencing requirement during construction in a project like this?
Yeah, in our tree preservation code, we do have. Actually, that's one of the provisions that's going to come into play. That when you're developing, you do fence off the trees. So because you know. We have examples where people try to save, the saved trees didn't get saved because of damage with construction.
Right.
So now we're fencing those, and I think we're going to add that to this.
Okay, that totally,
yeah.
In this zone more than any other, that should be
right.
Part of it.
Yeah.
The whole focus. It takes one meander and D8 to change that.
Yeah.
was one of the nice things about the project we did for the sidewalk. And it's walking to those areas where they were sparked off. It had a sign on it that specifically stated how much that tree cost.
Right.
It was damaged.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you notice they all made it through.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting approach.
Cost is a relative term, because if somebody won't buy it when they cut it down, it doesn't cost, it won't cost a dime.
I'm intrigued by the widespread use of rain gardens.
Uh-huh.
That is amazing.
Rain gardens?
Rain gardens. Implementing rain gardens as a source of controlled runoff is forward thinking.
Good. Good. Yeah. Yeah, we've been trying to, you know, even Cedar Falls uses biochannel, so we're trying to get that water back into the ground at its close to natural source, you know, versus the pipe and pond method of the past. Plus our water table's so high, it the pipe and pond here doesn't work like other places where you can dig a big hole in.
Well, so rain garden theory does keep this area very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. I mean, you're basically making a necessity, which is stormwater control and amenity. So.
Maybe she does.
Hopefully.
It's going to give her a rural feel, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Commissioner Miller. Well, once again, this has been really enlightening, all of us. I'm really loving the interesting conversations with Ned. This has been really interesting, right? All in all. Fellow arts, I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of fellow arts before. So that mix is really kind of crucial. It's just nice to see the mix is really kind of coming together.
Yeah.
A lot of care and oversight.
Good. Yeah, this will be a fun one to see, and I'm happy you guys are receptive to it, because it is kind of thrown at you, but we have an opportunity, and it's an opportunity to save a look and feel out there while allowing development to occur. So hopefully it will work out.
My only reservation is that we're talking in an area so specific and not the zone as a whole. And I get that the trees are predominantly in certain areas, but I think we ought to address it as the zone as a whole versus areas. That said, when we talk about harmonious zoning and how things fit together from zone to zone, this is the buffer into, you know, the next rural area. I think it's fitting with the way that the river was developed, which doesn't have sidewalks, which has the gravel shoulders and the storm drains, you know, along with it. So it kind of is keeping some character with what's there. I guess when I think of significant trees, I'm not at 12 inches. I'm at 18, 20, 24, or higher. I see that, you know, if you haven't managed your forest and they haven't been thinned commercially, that there are a lot of trees that are high propensity for wind, damage as they get exposed. So I don't know how we can do that in a low-impact area, is to really, send our arborist out after clearing and thin them, or what our process can be. But
a development like this will, you know, through the platting process and everything, the arborist will be one of our most leaned on consultants, and same with when we do engineering review and approval and then construction oversight, you know, because we are asking for so much tree retention and the trees to be integrated through the site, we're gonna have to monitor that, and trees will probably, you know, we might be into the development 2 months and decide this tree just isn't gonna make it, so we take it down and replace it. But
I see in Whitewood River was developed, and in my neck of the woods, the homes where you have the lot kind of cleared in, but the side, the 15 and 20 yards borders on each lot are retained, as well as the back cover to a certain point after giving you a usable backyard, right? So your border trees are there, which keep that feel. And they've replanted a little bit in the front, or there's some trees that continue on all the way to the front of the lot. I don't know how that works, you know, on a meandering street and thinking about that. I think that's still going to be something where you kind of go in and you clear a whole area. You've got to put in your septic tank, your foundation, and then you...
Well, this will have sewer. We're going sewer. Sewer. So the right-of-way will be... I mean, I actually made a note that we're going to bring you a cross-section of the internal road. So the road will be a paved two-lane road. Then there'll be a biochannel, which is treating the runoff from the road. And then instead of a typical sidewalk, we'll have a meandering trail. And we have to clarify if that's one side or two sides. And then the sewer lines and water lines will be, we have to, you know, typically they're in the, underneath the planter strip, so we'll have to decide because that will be biochannel. So we do have a little bit of work on this, that street section. I do want to point out, though, you know how you were saying you wish you were doing this as a zone-wide? Here's why I think this really makes sense as a demonstration. If you look at all of the zones, the only thing in city limits is this. Everything else has to be annexed. Mm-hmm. Annexation takes a year if they started tomorrow. There's a little small section up there, but it's already developed, so it's not, you know, people might redevelop one or two homes, but it's and there's no sewer there, so sewer, to redevelop, you're going to have to bring sewer there anyway. So that's even 5 years, maybe 3 years. So really, when we talk about this parcel as a demonstration, we actually have time to say, let's implement it, see how it looks, and then change it into the full regs for the rest of the zone we annex. So that's nice.
One other comment, I guess kind of related to fire wise or fire safe park, and we can't really consider noxious weeds and things like Scotch broom in the understory in a lot of these developments because they're probably cleared and graded. There's nothing you would have to have. So in this one, we're going to leave the forest, and maybe it's a very healthy forest. I don't know. I haven't been in there. Looking at the aerial, it looks
pretty nice.
Looks pretty nice.
Yeah.
But, I don't know if there are some openings, some gaps in there. I don't know if there's holly or some other things in there. You know, it's, part of it is that the city is limiting up trees. Part of it is native plants, and they will self-sustain themselves.
Yeah, so remove noxious weeds, you mean?
Yeah, I think it's a good opportunity for it, especially since this is just one site, and we may not have others like it because they're
not. The problem with that is that there's very few that are required for control. There's a lot of our Class B and C.
That's what I, when I really started to think about it, it's hard to say fall in as well as suffering isn't required, but if we use the fire angle.
Well, you could just say noxious weed, including Scotch broom, because you're writing your own regulations.
There's not a lot of Scotch broom. There's knotweed. There's the stinky bog and the holly and butterfly bushes.
Butterfly bush would be one, probably. Yeah. And that's not good for the riparian area.
Yeah. Most of the Scotch broom is more closer to the road edge, not in the deep forest.
I mean, probably best to walk the property and be specific, you know. But,
right,
you
right.
Know,
yeah. Okay, let me think of...
Yeah.
Well, you know, you also have an opportunity through the plotting process to apply through SEPA, the State Environmental Policy Act. So if, you know, when we review that, we can, that's when we get into the details of a site, and if all of a sudden we found out there was a ton of X, we can through SEPA say you need to, as part of your... vegetation management, remove that. So.
And Scott, I'm sorry, I'm 100% in agreement as long as it's the required for control weeds, the nice to have.
I don't think we're talking about it's required, that's the thing.
So not even knotweed.
Yeah, I mean, King County is working on all the reports right now, but it's not required. It's just a good
two that are in our area, in that area, that are.
Anything else, you guys?
Anything else?
Move to adjourn.
One second.
Good, the order. One, our next meeting
is August 25th. Is that correct?
Yeah, so is it...
We're not having a meeting?
When I saw your email today, I've meant to go look at our schedule. We are taking off the next meeting?
August 14th.
Yay, I got some time. You'd be surprised how fast, like, you guys review this, and then we have to have packets out next Friday for the next meeting. So every day it's like, packets are due. I'm like, really?
Other than that, I will be out for the 25th of August. I'm going to visit my dad, take the kids. Elizabeth is going to be your wonderful chair. So if you're all thinking about a vote, I was thinking next year sometime for new positions.
For the order issue?
Yes, sir.
In the back, we've got active...
Yes,
development
holders. Yes.
And we're looking at item 27. This is that lot that was basically sold right adjacent to the post office parking lot and the apartment houses. Is that the lot?
I think so, yeah.
The traffic pattern there is so confusing. That's not going to work with the restaurant. It's a roundabout.
Well, we're putting in a median, and the long-term plan is a median and another roundabout at Downing, so you couldn't...
There's no left turn there when you come out on the
right.
You gotta go
right, yeah. That was a safety thing that the city put in place, so there isn't...
I get that, but I just wonder how business is going to succeed with that limitation.
Well, when a median goes in, it's the same problem, and that has been looked at for the Phoenix Plaza, because the Phoenix Plaza next door is going to have that same issue when the median goes in. So, engineering and just the whole analysis kind of showed that the roundabouts are close enough together that it doesn't necessitate that much inconvenience, and it results in a lot more safety. So, by not allowing that left movement,
there is a roundabout at Park coming up.
Right? Yeah.
What's the timing?
Well, we went out for a grant and we didn't get it, so we're regrouping right now because it's expensive.
Okay. On the last page of the Visible Lands Report, under anticipated upcoming projects, Sunrise View subdivision, 18 to 27 units.
Yeah.
What kind of units do you know?
Those are single family. Those are just south of Cedar Falls, and a piece of property that you may know you may have a previous planning commissioner who owns. Yeah.
Wow. I was shocked to see 130 apartment units. Is it pre-application River Run? Is that the low income?
Where are you?
Yeah, that's the...
The third bullet under...
That's the affordable.
The affordable housing?
Yes.
Yeah. And that's not John Dave?
No, that's different. That's
River
that
Run,
way.
Or,
that's that off exit 32.
Anybody backing off? Anybody got in stuff and hold off? Like, Sigali's
holding off.
You heard why?
I wasn't expecting him to develop right away, just based on my gut instinct of his priority.
Yeah.
But that's just, so it doesn't surprise me.
But others are moving forward.
Yeah.
Pulte's on the market.
Yeah, I know it's...
Pulte's dirt, you mean?
Well, they have interest group, and they've got it all plotted out with the lots. They've got models marked.
Oh, the FEMA...
community assistance. That's happening in August.
Oh. Okay.
This guy?
I think they postponed it. Our staff has been working really hard preparing for it. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. My last thing is, there anything you'd like to share about our possible move to a different location for these meetings?
Long-term move? Oh.
Bondi told me.
Oh. Well.
Are you able to tell?
Well, the city council readdressed the city hall topic, and you know, previously we talked about maybe buying up some properties that needed revitalization and putting a second story of city hall. We have the public works site, so we're looking at building that public works site for cost effective option, and then maybe selling this and getting this back into commercial retail or something like that. So the council just took it up for the first time since last year on Tuesday. And they were open to the public works site. Yeah.
Exciting. You get air conditioning?
Yeah, like this.
All right. Now, Mr. Lucky, your motion.
Call the question? It's 20 minutes ago, but we'll get there.
Motion to adjourn?
Second.
Motion by Mr. Lucky, second by Mr. Heller, and all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned at 9:11.
9:11.